Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
What will historians make of this current period in American history in the midst of all the trivialities of the 2016 campaign? They may find a deeper movement to reclaim history and re-examine America's myths, everything from the Indian logo on a baseball cap to the notions of justice and freedom that get trotted out every 4 years and feel so unsatisfying in campaigns in which facts are disregarded and critical thinking is devalued. Carolyn Winterer is a professor of history at Stanford University who has looked back at the founders of America to re-examine just how radical they were and how much they challenged the thinking in Europe at the time. The so-called Enlightenment of the 18th century, she says, owes much to the American spirit. In her new book, American Enlightenments, Pursuing Happiness in the Age of Reason, Winterer writes about the period leading up to the Revolutionary War, a period of extreme radicalism and anything-is-possible experimentation that she says was driven by the sheer power of collective American curiosity.
They had no idea that they were crafting a mythical thing called the American Enlightenment. What I found instead was a lot of people who were asking a lot of questions about a very new thing, a new process that they called enlightenment with a small e. They wanted to become enlightened. Americans in the 18th century were not so much about declaring self-evident truths, but about asking how to make the world a better place, but never being sure whether they had hit upon the right way of doing that.
How do you come to the conclusion, and it's really interesting, that the experience of America and people in the New World was very much a driver of the Enlightenment in Europe, and it wasn't the other way around, that the Europeans were teaching, you know, rationality to Americans and they were putting it into practice in the woods.
Right. So the New World really was a new world at this time. And there were a lot of things that were happening in the Americas that were new and exciting and different. And they wrote about those things constantly and feverishly and with great excitement to Europeans, explaining to them that this was the condition of the Americas. They knew a lot about American Indians. They knew a lot about American mountains and rivers and clouds and oceans and beaches. And all of these things were so exciting to them. And they wrote to Europe, and Europe listened. And so this is what is new in this book, as you're pointing out, is to say that the Americans were not just receiving ideas that Europeans had concocted in their own studies, and then using these to create wonderful things like the American Revolution. Of course, some of that happened, but Americans were also writing back to Europe and shipping all kinds of things, boxes of caterpillars and mosses and moose antlers and all of these exciting things from the Americas back to Europe. And Europeans were using them to reevaluate where they stood in the world as well. So I prefer to see the Atlantic as a great conversation, not just a one-way boat ride for European ideas to America, but a very long-term conversation between Europeans and Americans.
You write about these letters that you use as source material. How surprising was the level of intensity in these conversations that you use to depict this Atlantic conversation as you describe it?
Well, these letters are wonderful, and there are hundreds of thousands of them. You know, we're getting to this era now where some people, like Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin, have 20,000 letters that they send and receive over the course of their lives. And what was wonderful about these letters is that you could try ideas out. You know, once you committed yourself to print, you were committed, right? You had said something and everybody was going to read it. But within the privacy of a letter, You could venture new ideas. And so when you read these letters, they're just all over the map. One single letter can talk about 15 different things. Greetings to your aunt. Let me tell you about my new stove that I am concocting, and I'm going to speculate about the chemistry of digestion. All of these things go in the space of one letter.
The open-mindedness of these letters, I think, leads me to the somber conclusion that comes, you know, later in your book, that this invention of the Cold War idea of an American Enlightenment to get us off the hook for World War II seems to me to become a kind of prison for America that gets recited over and over in our electoral rhetoric, saying we're the greatest nation on earth, that we're, you know, the land of freedom, and that it keeps us from seeing the things that we need to see in our own lives, lapses in our own society, conversations that we never had because of what the Cold War did. Is that how you think this all developed?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. The Cold War idea of a kind of sealed, totally sure American Enlightenment is an intellectual prison for us because it limits us to thinking about people in the 18th century, to thinking about them as kind of miniature versions of ourselves. And in fact, what we find when we go back there are models of open-ended inquiry, people who did not know a lot of things and who ended a lot of conversations with question marks rather than exclamation points. They wanted to know, and so they opened conversations with other people in other countries, in other languages, and they asked questions. You know, tell me, I do not know, what is the good society? What does it mean to create a just government? These are questions, and they are ones that Americans should continue to ask, and the 18th century gives us some models for how we can do that.
Do you wish the people running for president or in our political life were more inquisitive and less apparently confident about everything they say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we shouldn't build walls between our own country and other countries. We should learn each other's languages and talk to each other. You know, we're all human beings, and that was one of the great commitments of the Enlightenment, was to embrace our common humanity and the fact that our fates were all tied. We were all humans, and we were all going to go down that road together. So we could either do it together or separately. And so I worry about a national posture of defensiveness and negativity toward people who live elsewhere. That was not what the Enlightenment was about.
Caroline Winterer is a professor of history at Stanford University and author of American Enlightenments, Pursuing Happiness in the Age of Reason. Thanks so much.
Thank you.